This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. eHealth Radio gives you the most current health information, news, and advice featuring some of the leading innovators in healthcare and wellness who are changing healthcare as we know it. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. The World Health Organization revealed that over 619 million people globally had low back pain, and that number has only increased over the past couple of years. Lower back pain is also cited as the leading cause of disability for people. While traditional surgery has existed as a treatment option, medical leaders such as Dr. Peter Derman of the Texas Back Institute are advancing the use of minimally invasive procedures to help people obtain treatment and relief from back pain. With us today on the program, we have Dr. Peter Derman, a minimally invasive and endoscopic spine surgeon of the Texas Back Institute. And Dr. Derman, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Well, you're certainly more than welcome. Our pleasure. So to kick things off here today, and first of all, Dr. Derman, tell us what is meant by minimally invasive back surgery procedures and how it differs from, say, other approaches to back pain treatment.
Of course. While minimally invasive surgeries typically involve smaller incisions, the size of the incision is not necessarily the most important thing, although it is what patients see. Really, the key to minimally invasive is what happens under the skin. And that is not damaging the underlying muscles and tendons and ligaments around the spine. And that's really what allows patients to bounce back a lot faster. The traditional way of doing spine surgery, say low back surgery from the back, is an incision down the center of the low back. And in order for the surgeon to get to the spine, they have to literally burn and strip all of the muscles and stabilizing structures off the spine just to peer down and see what they need to do. And so what minimally invasive techniques do is allow surgeons to get to the spine to do that kind of work that needs to be done without doing all that collateral damage to get there. And that allows patients to bounce back a lot quicker, much faster recoveries, less time in the hospital, less need for pain medications afterwards. And that's really the key to get people up and moving and have successful outcomes in spine surgery.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like a no-brainer to go with the minimally invasive back surgery procedure for sure after hearing all that. Now, it does seem that back pain issues are an increasing concern for U.S. consumers. If you would, tell us a little bit about why Americans are ending up with back pain and if there is indeed an increase in the number of people with lower back pain issues and why this is going on. Get into some of the details there.
Well, certainly the studies do show that the prevalence of back pain and back-related issues are increasing, not just in the United States, but worldwide. And there's a few factors that are playing into this. So one is just general population growth. As the population of these countries increases, the number of people who have back issues, you know, is as a result going to increase. The aging of the populations also tends to result in increasing the overall amount of back pain because some back pain is due to degenerative wear and tear type changes that are cumulative and build up over time. Other factors that can result in back pain are overweight and obesity, which these structures in our spines, the discs and the joints, etc., they're mechanical structures. And so you imagine the more weight that we have pressing down on them, the faster that they're going to wear out and have issues. So certainly obesity can increase the rate of back pain. And we do have increasing rates of obesity in this country. Other factors that can be bad for the back and result in back pain and back-related issues are smoking. So a lot of people know, hopefully everyone knows, that smoking is bad for your heart, it's bad for your lungs and your overall health. But fewer people, I think, realize that smoking can be actually very bad for your spine and is very much correlated with spine-related problems. What the nicotine does, and the nicotine is really the key problem. So it's not like if you don't smoke cigarettes, but instead vape or use nicotine gum or something like that, you're not totally in the clear because the nicotine decreases the blood flow to the spine and the discs and reduces its healing potential. And then there are some associations with different kinds of occupational activities. So heavy labor, as you might imagine, can be related to an increased amount of spine problems. And so these things, these factors in general, I think are contributing to the overall increase that we're seeing in spine-related issues.
Yeah, thanks for your input and feedback on that. That is most helpful. Now, I'd like to circle back to you, Dr. Derman, as a board-certified surgeon with an advanced degree in business administration. Your credentials are very impressive. But tell us how you found your calling as a surgeon in dealing with spinal injury and pain. That certainly is an interesting shift, if you will.
Oh, very good question. You know, I've always been interested in helping people feel better. And being a spine surgeon, especially a minimally invasive spine surgeon, allows me to, with my own hands, fix people. And these minimally invasive techniques allow patients to bounce back so quickly that I get this kind of instant gratification of people just getting up and feeling so much better. And that's just such a rewarding thing. And then from kind of a intellectual standpoint, I find that spines are really just interesting problems. So everyone that comes into my office has a unique set of issues, a unique set of symptoms, a unique physical exam and set of imaging findings, and it's not often cut and dry. And so that puzzle, really trying to piece together what exactly is causing this patient's pain, what is the least invasive way that we can help them feel better, and typically it's with non-surgical measures. So only a minority of my patients end up needing surgery. But for me, it's that kind of interesting puzzle of figuring out every individual patient, figuring out what the smallest thing is we can do to help them feel better, and then watching them feel better. And that's really the most rewarding part of my job.
Anytime you're helping anyone feel better, that's got to bring such joy and contentment, no doubt about that. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Peter Derman, a minimally invasive and endoscopic spine surgeon of the Texas Back Institute. He's joined us here today on eHealth Radio's Health News and Orthopedic Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, another question, if you would, share some tips for our listeners on how to avoid spinal injury and back pain. I'm sure they would appreciate that.
Well, to piggyback on your earlier question about the factors that are resulting in an increase in back pain, really avoiding those things are the most important thing. One thing that we can't control is our genetics. And there is a genetic predisposition, in many patients towards spine-related problems. Just like some people have arthritis that runs in their family, you know, spine-related problems are very similar. Now, it doesn't have to be like your mom's mom and her mom and her mom before her. It's not that linear, but there is a tendency towards spine-related issues. And so, you know, some people, they just, that's the card that they're dealt, but you can't change that, right? So the only things that we can modify are the things that we have control over. And what are those things? One, I talked about overweight and obesity. You know, keeping a healthy diet, maintaining a healthy weight, and then keeping your core as strong as possible. And when we hear core, the first thing many people think of is, you know, abs. What do you do for your abs? Crunches. I'm not so sure crunches are really the best activity. You know, if you think about what a crunch is doing, is it's crunching. Every single time you do it, it's compressing your discs. Now, I'd rather people exercise than not exercise, but for me, I've moved much more toward isometric type activities, such as planks, side planks, bridges. Those kind of things strengthen the core muscles without kind of crunching and crunching and crunching. The other thing is, you know, the core is not just the abs, it's the flanks and the back muscles too. And all of these things contribute to the stability of the spine. So by maintaining a healthy weight to reduce the amount of weight pushing down and keeping your core strong to create like an internal back brace and literally lift you up, that's really a way to give your spine the most support that it can possibly have. From a lifting perspective, you know, it's important to have good form when you lift. So, you know, we say, don't lift with your back, lift with your legs. So really squatting down, keeping your back straight, and when you're lifting heavy objects, tends to be much better for your back. I see a lot of injuries from people lifting heavy weights at the gym. And it's not like you can't lift heavy weights. In fact, I encourage people to go to the gym. But things like Olympic lifting, such as deadlifts and squats with a heavy bar, involve leaning forward and lifting at the same time. And that does put a lot more pressure on the discs in the front of the spine. So if you're going to do those kind of activities, it's very important to keep really, really obsessively good form, which, you know, can easily slip as you're getting tired or if you're in a competitive type environment. So I think the key is to remember why you're exercising. You're exercising to be healthy. And if you're doing something that's putting you at risk, I think just keep that in mind and make sure that you are really being cognizant of your form and how you're doing this. And then the last thing that I wanted to re-mention is really avoiding tobacco and nicotine-containing products, because we know that these are really bad for people. One other thing that that came to mind as you were kind of transitioning there is, you know, prolonged sitting puts a lot of pressure on the spine, really prolonged anything, right? We're made to move around and do different things. And so for my desk workers, I think that it's a good idea, one, to have an ergonomic workstation. So your monitor, if you're looking at a computer, should be straight ahead. You know, looking down is bad for your neck over the course of time. You really want everything, your eyes trained straight ahead. But then I think that a sit-stand desk can also be really helpful. That way you're not sitting for 8 hours a day or necessarily standing for 8 hours a day. You can change your position and you're not putting prolonged force on any particular part of your body the entire time.
I got to tell you, I never would have imagined that nicotine and the use of tobacco products would cause problems for your spine. That is news to me, and I'm sure an eye-opener for those tuning in as well. Lastly, can you share with us how minimally invasive or endoscopic surgery procedures made an impact for one of your patients? That would be some great detail there as we conclude today.
Of course. So we talked about what minimally invasive means in general. Just to piggyback on that, endoscopic is really kind of my passion within my passion. And what that means is, instead of opening up the body and peering in either with the naked eye or with, you know, magnifying lenses or something like that, what an endoscope is a camera. And so many, many of my surgeries now, I'm doing through an incision the size of a dime and placing a long, narrow camera in so I can look at the spine and fix problems without really opening things up. And this has really been revolutionary in my ability to address especially things like pinched nerves and herniated discs and stenosis with very, very rapid recovery. So most of these patients are in and out of the hospital. After I'm done with surgery, they're home within a couple of hours. Many of them take no pain medications whatsoever, not even Tylenol after surgery, and are back at work like the next day. So certainly not what people imagine from a spine surgery, for sure. It's more like getting your knee scoped or your shoulder scoped or something like that. And so that, I think, is just so cool to really eliminate somebody's severe sciatica. And it's like magic. It just melts away. And there's not the same kind of surgical site discomfort associated with doing so. So I feel like it's like stealth surgery. I get to sneak in, address a problem, and sneak out, and they're better off. And, you know, that allows people, one, to bounce back faster, but really, to answer your question, the ones that I find the most rewarding is, in some cases, it allows me to do just like a clean-out type procedure when, via other means, if you didn't have access to a surgeon that had these endoscopic techniques, would require a much larger and different kind of procedure. So, for instance, you know, one that comes to mind is a lady that I did this week, who had a big disc herniation next to a previous fusion of her spine that she'd had by another surgeon. And because of the location of this disc herniation, which was causing her debilitating sciatica, due to some anatomic constraints and where it was, using traditional techniques, she would have needed a much bigger surgery, more fusion, more screws and rods and cages in her spine in order to address this problem. And the surgeon that initially saw her recognized this as an issue, sent her to me for an endoscopic surgery. And so I was able to, with my little camera and a dime-sized incision, sneak in there without removing any structural components of her spine, remove that disc herniation, immediately alleviated her severe sciatica. And because I wasn't so disruptive to the rest of the spine, She didn't need any additional fusion or anything like that. So she woke up with complete relief of her symptoms and was home, you know, a few hours later. We called her the next day and she was, you know, happy as a clam. And so those are really the ones where minimally invasive doesn't, and endoscopic doesn't just mean smaller incision, quicker recovery, that's very important, but it fundamentally changes the surgery that we're able to do, you know, preserving motion, not needing additional fusion, et cetera. And those are the ones that I'm the most proud of.
Well, that certainly is quite an example. I really appreciate that and appreciate your visit and what you do in the space on behalf of Texas Back Institute. Dr. Dermott, where can listeners get more information on the Texas Back Institute and how can they be in touch as needed?
Yeah, so we have a website online. If you just Google Texas Back Institute, it's a very comprehensive website. I have 20 plus partners. We are a very big spine group. And the benefit of that is it allows us to get very focused on whatever little niche of spine surgery excites us. And so we have experts in everything. And so if you peruse the website, we have a lot of educational material there about the various different spinal problems, different techniques and solutions, and you'll have a lot of contact information there if you'd like to make an appointment. The other thing is, if you're interested in learning more about endoscopy and my practice, I have some social media sites. So Peter Dermott MD is my Instagram and Facebook tag, and if you want to check it out there, I post a lot of educational stuff there as well.
Definitely have some resources to tap into. Folks, again, it is texasback.com. Dr. Dermott, all the best, and certainly appreciated your joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
Much appreciated. Have a great day.
And you too. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Peter Dermott, a minimally invasive and endoscopic spine surgeon of the Texas Back Institute. And for further details, visit texasback.com. And this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.